Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's Jean-Luc Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Ranks FC. It's the third of your season preview episodes and today we're all about France. We're talking about Ligue 1 and we have a very special guest. But before we introduce him, hello to Mr. Sam Tyler, Rank God. How are you doing, mate?
Bonjour. I am great. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you. And joining us today, it's a blast from the past, our old friend, Mr. Alex Collings of the Scouted Football Network. And also, Alex, you're starting something different with Football Per 90, I hear, this year. One, congratulations. And two, it's lovely to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, so I was doing, we were doing pod, but I'm kind of moving over to sort of doing like video profiles on YouTube. So we'll see. That should be coming soon and we'll see how it pans out.
Absolutely. Sounds like hard work, Alex.
Yeah, exactly.
Like really hard work. You've grown a tremendous beard since I last saw
Yeah. It's also winter here, so it's very, very cold. So I've got like hoodie, beard, beanie. It's all...
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real stark contrast.
Considering how warm we are, yeah.
Yeah, I've
heard of it. In this room, and I'm in shorts and t-shirt. So for once, living in England pays off.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It's great to have you back, Alex. We're going to kind of work through Liga in a number of ways. We're going to kind of pitch it up in a couple of questions. So I'm going to hand the reins over to Sam for the time being, and away we'll go.
Okay, yeah. So I basically have five big questions for Alex. And I think we'll start here at number one, which is on PSG. Most people's expectation is that PSG will go ahead and win the Ligue 1 title. But there have been a couple of suggestions recently, actually, that they'll not only do that, but they'll go on to break their points record in Ligue 1. So there's a lot of hype right now around PSG. And I guess the question is quite simple. Alex, do you think they're actually capable of that?
So yeah, I think in terms of capability, I think it's really hard to say that they aren't when they've got like Mbappe, Neymar and Messi. And I definitely think they're going to be better this season than they were under Poch, who was kind of like a disappointment overall, I think, if you look back at them. I think Galtier's got a sort of a better, maybe a more functional sort of just system in terms of kind of getting the balls to them and just kind of letting them do their thing, but keeping like good structure behind. So I think it's a better fit. Whether they'll break their points tally, which is, I think it's like 96 points a couple of seasons
96,
back.
96, yeah.
In like what, 2015, 16? No, that might have been. But yeah, so I think they could. It really just kind of depends. It just depends how it sort of pans out. I think they're going to blow a lot of teams away, as they do every year. I think also, as we'll kind of get onto later, there aren't any big sort of teams that I think can kind of beat them from a functional perspective. I think a big reason that they lost points in previous seasons, especially under Poch, is he never really got them playing in a functional way, so that there were always like places where you could kind of exploit them, especially in terms of how they defended out of possession, right? But with that said, that's still a problem. I mean, Mbappe, Neymar, Messi, as good as they are in possession, they're a liability, all three of them, out of possession. And yeah, in modern football, like when you have like your whole front line of press is like not very good, and that's usually an issue. So yeah, it depends. I mean, I could see it happening. I think they've got better backup now, especially like Verratti sort of plays almost like a half-time footballer with how often he's out. Having Vitinha in there, who's kind of like in a similar like functional profile, right? If maybe not necessarily stylistic, although there are similarities. I think just having that sort of continuity in the midfield will help them a lot in not dropping those sorts of points. So I definitely could see them breaking, you know, 96, maybe being centurions, but yeah, you never really know.
Yeah, it's a long old season. Lots can go wrong, even for the very best. Maybe then we're looking at that goals scored record set in 2018, which is 108. You're talking there about how they're going to blow some teams away. And I think this is part of why people are expecting maybe the points record to be smashed, because it's very feasible that you open your scores app and you know, Hakimi and Messi and Neymar and Mbappe have just wrought havoc on like whoever it is that day, and they've won like 6 or 7-0. Like I could easily see that happening like 5-6 times this season.
That's interesting. I mean, I think part of it is that Galtier as a coach has always been a little bit more pragmatic. So I think he also really likes to keep sort of solid. So actually, I wonder how that will sort of play into it. If, because I mean, I think he also kind of has to adapt to the squad, right? He's a coach coming to, again, a club with Mbappe, Neymar, and Messi. They're all going to want to score. They're all going to want to be attacking. And he's got guys like Hakimi and Nuno Mendes on, you know, in the wide areas of very attacking players. So yeah, I think he could. But it'll be kind of interesting. It's a new challenge for him that he hasn't had at Nice or at Lille. In terms of actually embracing that attack rather than being a bit more pragmatic, right?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting thing, and you've kind of touched exactly on it there, Alex. It's one of those points where I almost think that, I know this is a domestic preview, so you know we're not going to Europe, but I actually think that the Galtier's inclusion here actually might set them up better for European competition than necessarily to smash records domestically, because it feels like they are going to be better balanced. And I think we've seen that. Obviously, he was famed for that 4-4-2 for various clubs that he's played for in the past. And he's come straight in and been like, I think we might need three centre-backs here if this is going to work.
Yeah, that's
and, you know, something we talked about last year. I remember having this discussion last year and thinking, okay, maybe PSG need to go to a three at the back, because otherwise this might just not work if you're trying to play Hakimi down that right-hand side and no one's covering those spaces. And we saw PSG kind of lose their heads in Europe and get exploited. And actually, it's the kind of thing you kind of imagine that the Galtier won't let happen. So I wonder if actually, in terms of domestics, I think they'll win the league. I think you'd be mad to bet against it at this point. But equally, I wonder if it's actually in Europe that we see the biggest change in how PSG operate because of what he's been brought in to do. And what he's been brought in, I think, with a mandate to do. Because this isn't, you know, to walk around and say that Galtier is a better or worse coach than Pochettino. I think they're both brilliant coaches. It's more that he's been, you know, Poch was given this kind of mandate to play entertaining, to play exciting football, which is what he's been kind of branded for, full stop. Galtier has been brought in to kind of stream this back and be like, okay, right, hang on. The whole, what I think it was Nasu who said, the glitter is over. You know, those kind of things, it's clearly not, but it's one of those where you're looking at it and going, okay, he's been given a mandate to play slightly, you know, he's not being asked to go and blow teams away, perhaps. He's being asked to turn this team into a machine that can win not only domestically, but also continentally as well. And so I wonder if that's where we see the biggest change.
I mean, I don't want to take away too much from like the domestic thing as well, but that's one of the big things I'm kind of thinking. Because I think you can get away with, you know, having all three of the superstars in that front line in the league for sure. And I think Galtier is building a good sort of, like defensive sort of thing to accommodate them, right? But in Europe, when you're kind of getting to the round of 16, round of 8, like semifinals, I kind of wonder, like, is he ever going to get to the sort of point where he feels he has to drop, you know, one of Neymar or Messi, yeah, basically. So it'll be interesting. I mean, he's also maybe not a coach that they've had in the past with as much like clout or like reputation in the game. I think he has kind of built a good reputation for himself. But I mean, Poch came in with a bigger reputation. Obviously, they've had guys like Carlo and Tuchel who had bigger reputations, right? So it'll be a very big call from Galtier, but we'll kind of see. I think he's better supported by sort of the like the front office or executive staff than previous managers have been.
And they have a new front office as well, which is pretty Mbappe. Much one of the biggest wins PSG have yeah, not Mbappe, kind of, but obviously with the new structure in place and Luis Campos pulling the strings here. Yeah. And basically, the big win here is that Leonardo is gone. So that you never know really how much of a difference that can make for PSG. But we'll move on from the predicted champions and just go slightly further down the table. And I want to ask you, Alex, who is going to be the best of the rest?
So yeah, when kind of preparing for these questions, I kind of realized that like maybe compared to previous seasons, I'm far less sure on like how things are going to pan out. Just because, I mean, first thing I'll say is that I think the rest are all far behind PSG. There have been years before and where you kind of felt like PSG were a bit more vulnerable than I feel they are this season, and that there was a team that was kind of like in a good point in their cycle that they could make a like an underdog challenge, right?
Yeah.
I don't see that with anyone this year. There's just a lot of teams that are kind of in it. But yeah, I think the three that I kind of picked up as like the best of the rest is Lyon, Rennes, and Monaco, right? So let's move through them. So for Lyon, I mean, obviously they finished 8th last season, which wasn't great. But like, excusing my own bias on it, I think they probably do have the best squad after PSG's. We'll see what happens with Paqueta. It kind of looks like he's staying at this point. You never really know in that kind of final week or two of the window. But I'd say he's the best non-PSG player in the league. Then we've just got loads of talent in midfield. We have a midfield rivaling PSG's to some extent. And we've got attackers. Probably lack a sort of a good runner profile if Toko Kambi isn't playing. So thankfully he's staying. But in terms of problems, still the defense. We've only really got one center back that I really back, which is Lukeba. I absolutely love him. But other than that, we've got Jerome Boateng, who hasn't worked out. He's fallen out with the squad. He wants to move away. And then we've kind of got Thiago Mendes, who kind of like has been like moved into this sort of center back role, which is very like Bosch-like, right? To kind of do that. We were looking for a center back. I think we were basically going for Issa Diop. And then when we miss out on him, from what it looks like, the club just kind of went, oh, well, we tried for a center back and we'll just see how it goes, right? So,
good.
Yeah.
That sounds like sensible business. Yeah.
I mean, that's Lyon. modern day Lyon for you. And then the other question mark I just have is over Bosch. I'm a fan of how he plays and tries to get the team playing, but I think there's no denying he's a very, very flawed coach. And yeah, it's a punishing league when you have those sort of like vulnerabilities in transition, especially with a lot of strong fast runners and teams that like to camp deep and hit you on the break. So yeah, that kind of messed with him last season. And we'll see if it happens again. I could see him going early. I hope it isn't the case, but we'll see.
What have you made of the very heartwarming, I think, homecomings for Lyon this summer?
You know what?
Lacazette and Tolisso.
So I'll speak to Lacazette first, because I actually didn't agree with it as a move from a profile fit, because I think we need guys who can actually get into good scoring positions and make those runs, which we kind of lack at the moment. But I've warmed up to it a lot. I mean, I still wouldn't say I'm crazy about it, but one of the nice things is that another problem Lyon has actually had that I forgot to mention is that there's this general like level of professionalism or attitude within the squad that has kind of died since the Lacazette-Tolisso days. And I think a big part of bringing them back is like a cultural reset that the club really felt was needed. And I think I agree with that. And I think it's going to bring back a sort of leadership and just helping to keep the squad together, which has been an issue in previous seasons. So I'm a fan of it from that perspective. Tolisso, I still think, is a good player. I think as a youth enthusiast, I always want to see us going for like the next big thing. But I think Tolisso is a sensible signing. Both are relatively expensive on the wages, so we'll have to watch that. But yeah, overall, I think I'm happy with it, especially if it achieves that like cultural reset that we're going for.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. Absolutely. I mean, I have no idea how good Tolisso is at football anymore. It's just been a
to
long
be honest,
time.
Me neither.
Yeah, it's hard to say. No one can really say with too much confidence. But good to see that storyline pop up. Anyway, on to Ren.
So yeah, for them, I feel like they could actually have a good shot at second this year. They just have this great momentum at the club, like in all aspects of the club right now. But I mean, to start it off, they have an amazing attack and lots of different attackers and attacking profiles that they can kind of rely on. I've been very critical on Genesio and ex-Lyon coach over my time. But one thing he's always been very good at sort of like just giving that like that responsibility to attackers and trusting, especially young attackers and midfielders, just to do their thing going forward, right? So I think they've got an amazing attack. They'll probably build on that. It doesn't really look Terrier might be going, it sounds like. But it doesn't really, there's nothing really firm to suggest that it actually will happen yet. So, I mean, they've lost Tell, Matthias Tell, which probably means that they don't have to lose anyone else, right? So yeah, I expect them to do well going forward. I have a sort of an inkling, we'll kind of see if it pans out, that they might be moving to a three at the back, especially with the sort of guys that they've gone for in Rodon and Tiet. Not sure if I'm saying his name right, but those are also good additions. And I'll add that I think they got Loic Bade last season to a lot of hype. I kind of didn't know how well it would go, because to me he feels very much like a three in the back center back, someone who performs really well there, maybe be a bit exploited out in the two. And I think it did actually, that was the case last season. So I think maybe they're moving to a three at the back to try to get the most out of him, which I think is a good idea, especially with losing Agüero. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, so Bade was at his absolute peak, right, in a back three for Lens, ahead of the big move, and last year was a bit of a struggle. It felt like there was a 2 month period for Rennes where they actually had so many injuries last year, specifically in the back line, that no one could really find their feet. And it must be tough for a player of that, you know, he's still very young, but with that much hype, for him to kind of settle into that. But it's definitely an interesting one. I do know who your next suggestion is, though, and I do think that this team is stronger.
I'll agree.
So go ahead.
So I think Monaco is probably the safest shot, because I can see Lyon sort of having another terrible season, as hard as that is to say, and I can see Rouen kind of like also falling off. And also a weakness about Rouen is I still want to see what's actually happening with their midfield. If they do move to a three at the back, how they're going to kind of support that. Monaco, there are less questions over there. It's a strong squad. It's a more experienced squad than the other two, which I think helps for sure. And they've got a really good defense in guys like Disasi and Badiashile. The fullback's also very good. Going forward, they've got good attackers like Ben Yedder, but then also guys who could have good seasons. I mean, I'm not ready to give up on Bodu. And they've just signed Breel Mbolo, who really does feel like the most Monaco signing. Yeah,
how has he not played for Monaco before?
Yeah. So, and I think he's a good fit for them. They've also got Minamino, who I think is just like a solid addition, you know, someone who will like help impact, even if he's not necessarily going to be a star ever, in my opinion. So I think they've got a...
On Minamino, Alex, actually, we were a little bit, Jack, weren't we a little bit like just not confused, but just like a bit taken by the,
taken
on the blind
back,
side
yeah.
by this one. We were like, he doesn't necessarily fit tactically or like ideally positionally into what we saw at the end of last season for Monaco, we thought. Or if he did, it was going to be at the expense of, you know, one of the big two up front. So have they done anything to change this?
So I didn't actually watch enough of Philippe Clement at the end of last season. But I mean, he obviously took over like midway through the season, right? So I wonder if maybe he's changing things.
Doing what he wants. Now he's got
the
chance to do it.
Sorry, forgot. Yeah, maybe he's changing things coming in. But I also kind of didn't really see Minamino as like a definite starter for them. I kind of see him as like an option to play in certain games or to come off the bench. I don't really view him as a starter. Maybe I'm underrating Minamino the player. I expected him to stay in the Premier League with like a Southampton sort of level team, to be honest.
Yeah, Leeds or something, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're gonna make any accommodations for him. I also don't know what Clement wants to kind of achieve. We'll kind of see the season, I guess. But I think it makes sense. It's a smart enough signing in terms of someone that I feel they can bring in who will make an impact.
Yeah, I like it.
From Taki's perspective, I just would have wanted to go and play somewhere a bit more.
Well, I think this
yeah,
is the thing.
From his perspective, for sure. I kind of expected him to stay in the Premier League, to be honest, and be a starter somewhere.
Sam, I mean, I watched their friendly against Southampton last week, and it was an interesting one. Monaco lost 3-1, but the first half was very, very impressive, I thought, from Monaco. And everything went through Minamino. Like, the entire game setup was him dropping off. They played an effective 4-4-1-1. And he basically was in that hole just making things happen. And he hit the woodwork, he made things happen. There was a couple of chances that were all basically his kind of late runs. It really did look to work. And actually, you know, obviously in the second half, Monaco faded and it wasn't that impressive, but there were changes kind of rung around the sort of 50, 60 minute mark. But I was impressed, and I wonder if that's what the change is going to be. You know, Kevin Volland obviously has had a wonderful career and it has been brilliant, but he is starting to get on a little bit. And
are
I want
retiring Kevin Volland.
I'm not retiring. I'm not retiring him. I'm making him an impact substitute. And I think it was interesting to see that happened. Right, they made that change. They went a little bit wider. Golovin kind of played slightly wide, kind of sort of like an interior winger almost. And it was kind of interesting to see how they kind of played it out. But I wonder if Minamino comes in here and just how creative he was, especially in that first half, kind of settles himself in as a starter in a kind of slightly changed 4-4-2 shape, because that's what it looked like it was going to be.
Like, he was on the right of a 4-4-2 in the Champions League qualifier as well, which looked 4-4-2-ish rather than before, which was definitely, well, I mean, I guess you could say it was the same thing, but I would have branded it more as a 4-2-3-1 with Volland a bit deeper, but we'll have to see. But it's a very interesting one for sure.
Yeah, I think I'll say, like, I think for their attackers, maybe apart from Ben Yedder, we'll see how he's doing this season, but there's no real, like, definite, and maybe Breel Mbolo, actually, but there's no, like, definite sort of people who are, like, locked on to start, right? Yeah, I think they need an addition in their midfield. I think they probably will go for an addition in their midfield.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of see them as a squad that's going to be good, going to probably make Champions League.
It's a deep squad, isn't it?
It really is. Deep. They've always had a deep squad, though, just from buying loads of young players and seeing if they work out. It's always kind of been like one of the deeper squads where you kind of go down and then you see like Willem Goebbels is still there. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Crepin Diatta is back.
It's
that sort of thing. Like, it is a really deep squad. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think looking at it, you know, the three you've picked out, I'd probably always shade towards the deepest squad there to basically edge everyone out over the course of the season.
There's the least variance there with them. Like, I don't see them messing up, but I also don't see them having like some crazy season.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'd agree. It's probably time to move on to question three then.
Okay, yeah, question number three. And it's on our beloved Lille. They've appointed a new manager in Paulo Fonseca. Hopefully they're a bit more entertaining at the very least. But Alex, what are your expectations for them this season?
For them, I kind of see them having a rebuild season. I think they need that. I think Fonseca's a great hire. And it's weird, like, same as Brelembolo moving to Monaco, Fonseca at Lille just kind of feels like one of those things that, like, just works. Like, you'd see it happening in FM a lot, that sort of move, right? But I'm excited. Fonseca is one of my favorite coaches to watch from years back at Shakhtar. Didn't really follow him enough at Roma, but I think he did well despite ending up getting the sack.
He did.
They've lost some big players though. Botman, Sanchez.
Just adding to that list, Zeki Celik is also gone. He's probably
Burak
Yılmaz, Zeki Celik. It's like four or five start, and obviously they lost Ikone in January to Fiorentina. So we're looking at five or six players there from the title win, which, you know, still
it's a good chance for a rebuild. Two seasons ago. time moves quickly, right? But yeah, I see them having a rebuild season. I think I'll say the same for Nice. I kind of also see them having a rebuild season. So I kind of, especially they've also just brought in a new coach in Favre. Brought him back. So for both those clubs, I kind of see them in the same sort of thing where they've lost some big players. They've also made some good signings. And they've brought in coaches that I think are good. Galtier, obviously a very good coach. So Favre kind of on the same level, I would say, or maybe just a little bit lower. But Fonseca is obviously a big upgrade for Lille. So I kind of just see how they rebuild. I don't see them having a sort of a crazy good season yet. It's a season of rebuild for them and just kind of implementing a style and you're kind of trying to do well with the recruitment and involve some of the younger players that they have. So that's kind of what I'm expecting from them this season.
Yeah, I just looking at those, you know, not putting them in the best of the rest conversation, obviously, but I am a huge fan of Fonseca as well. I think he's a really good coach, genuine coach. I think he'll do a lot for these players. Jonathan David is still there. I think that's a really nice manager-player match in terms of style. And I am just cautiously optimistic that, yeah, again, not vaulting themselves into the best of the rest conversation, but sixth or even fifth is not out of the question for Lille, even when rebuilding.
Absolutely not. I think I see them fighting for top seven, top six. I mean, I think I will say Ligue 1 has a lot of good coaches now, but also like there are about six or seven big clubs. I mean, what is it? Obviously PSG, Monaco, Lyon, Marseille, Rennes, Nice and Lille, right?
Yeah.
Seven or so. So I think it's getting tougher, but I do still, I see them being thereabouts. I think it's a season of rebuild. I'm not going to expect too much. Maybe Fonseca completely surprises me. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on them. So at the moment.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense. It's a funny one. The squad is small, I would suggest, at this point. With players that are going to be used at the very least. And that makes things kind of a bit strange. But this next couple of weeks, I think, is going to be massive for Lille.
100%. Because they've just sold Renato and they're about to sell Amadou Onana. I saw like last night that he's either going to West Ham or Everton. So that's a lot of money that they're going to be getting in.
And a lack of midfielders that they actually have.
Yeah.
So they've
they need to address that.
Is Benjamin Andre just going to play on his own now? Because from last season, obviously, Amadou Onana, I'd love to get your thoughts on him because someone I actually spent a couple of hours on Thursday watching. Because I had to just brush up on him with the fact that he's now costing £33 million plus add-ons, if personal terms agree, which is, I'm going to be really honest, a lot of money for Amadou Onana, given what I've seen. So have I caught the wrong games, or is this a bit odd?
I'm glad you said that because I also don't see the hype around him. I see a lot of like legal mutuals like hype him. I haven't seen it as of yet. I didn't watch a lot of Lille last season because they were boring and not very good. But when when I did watch them, especially in European competition, like I saw Amadou Onana playing like as a 10 at times or thereabouts as a 10, which obviously isn't the sort of position that I kind of been told he was coming into the season. I've been told he was more of like a DM.
It's definitely not the position that West Ham have signed him for. Let's put it that
way. No. But he's also not very good as a 10. I think he didn't impress me much at all in that position. So I could, maybe it's harsh. I've seen him a bit deep and he's been decent. But yeah, I don't see the hype as of yet. Maybe there's something I'm missing because, I mean, West Ham have been pretty good with their recruitment, I think. Or at least in terms of the profiles that they want. I see him fitting West Ham, that's it.
So that's basically it. He's perfect for David Moyes because he's a bit Thomas Suchek. He's absolutely huge. Aerial, like, domination, loads of duels. His telescopic legs are coming out and tackling. But he just basically operates in that 30-yard midfield zone and just smashes through stuff and heads things clear. This is the physical edge that David Moyes is building at West Ham. So from a profile there, it kind of makes sense. But
it's that
honing in very specifically on one type of player that you want, which has probably led to, in my opinion, just way too much money on this player. Like it, I can understand why West Ham are doing it. Like I know what they want from him, but this has shocked me. He made 11 starts last season in the league for Lille. He played the fourth most minutes of their midfielders, and actually, you know, Zeka, who left on a free transfer.
I was going to say sign Checo on a free.
He's gone. Yeah, I mean, he's gone now as well. So yeah, Lille needs some players, but Onana, okay, good. Good to get some gratification.
I'm glad someone agrees with me because there's a lot of hype around him, but I haven't seen it as of yet. I'm very willing to be proven wrong, but he seems decent, just nothing special.
It just seems like a lot of money for a potential rather than proven quality when you could go out and get Ibrahim Sangare for a similar fee.
100%, that's like, a great one.
That's the point.
If I saw him going for 15 million, I don't think I would have been like, oh, that's surprising at all. Or even 10, maybe 10, a bit like on the low side, given his age. But yeah, he doesn't seem a 35, 33 million pound player.
Bang absolutely. On. Let's get to number four.
Okay, question number four. Who is the biggest regression candidate in Ligue 1 this year?
So yeah, like I said earlier, I think I'm going to, without putting everything on the line on one. There's one team I have in mind, but I think I'll first go through two teams that actually overperformed. So it feels harsh to kind of give them as pin them out as regression candidates, but just it's due to how well they did. So Strasbourg and Lens are the two that I kind of see potentially dropping off, which is natural for overperformers. Strasbourg, Julian Stefan, I absolutely love him. I think he's amazing. Alongside De Zerbi, if Bosch had to go, those are the two guys that I would be looking at. But yeah, for them, they're keeping most of their team around. I haven't seen any big outgoings. Ludovic Ajok, who was their top scorer, might be going, and that could be significant. I still think that they have guys like Habib Diallo, who can kind of replace even within the squad. But yeah, I mean, I think they'd obviously hope to keep him. I kind of see them dropping off depending on how well the teams below like recover, such as Lyon and Lille. And that's kind of the real reason that I see them potentially dropping off, that other teams had bad seasons, which is part of why they ended up coming sixth. But at the same time, I just think Julian Stefan's really good. I think the squad, that he's managed to get a lot out of that squad. So I could kind of see them still hanging around in, you know, that sixth to eighth sort of zone. So we'll see. I'm excited to see how they do.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that they are relatively solid. Now, and I'm going to caveat this with pre-season, et cetera, and this was an incredibly young Liverpool team they played. But watch this game. And they bullied Liverpool. And it was, you know, yes, it's, you know, a very, very light team going forward. But the back two were Ibrahima Konate and Joe Gomez. And both of them, you know, Ajok put both of them to the sword, basically. He was just like, nah, this is my world and I'm going to play in it.
Is that the point that scores 18-yard headers?
Yes, it is, yes. and he was excellent. Really, really impressive. So, yeah, I agree. If they lose him, obviously they will get a fee for him and will be able to look to replace. But if they lose Ajok, I can see them dropping backwards a little bit. If they don't, I said they'd be right back in that conversation for a European spot. So I'm kind of with you.
Yeah, I like them. I think they're probably the one people expect to drop off more. But actually, I think moving on to the other club, I think that's more going to be the case for Lens, just because they've been gutted. So they had a very good season last season as well. They came seventh under Frank Hayes. But they've lost Cheick Doucouré, who was, you know, alongside Seko Fofana, like basically the backbone of that like team in the midfield. And I love him. We can talk about him later. Then there's Jonathan Klaus, who is obviously, I think his name kind of, he finally got the recognition he's deserved for a while last season. Strong sort of right wing back that I don't even think they've replaced yet. Maybe I've missed that in their incomings. And then obviously Onat Kalimundo, who did really well for them up front. He's gone back to PSG. So those are three big names that they've lost. And yeah, I just think I haven't seen the recruitment coming in as of yet for them. But yeah, I kind of feel like just losing those names, we'll see how Frank Hayes does, but I kind of feel they're going to drop off a bit, especially with, like I said, with regard to Strasbourg, teams like Lille and Lyon recovering.
Yeah. It's got to be three of the five best players from last season for them, maybe?
I would say. Yeah, that's probably...
How on earth on that budget, you know, where they position themselves in the food chain, how do you recover from that?
I wonder if Callum Wendell goes back on loan again, or even permanently. There are sort of murmurings about him leaving PSG. Now I wonder if there'd be clubs with bigger budgets looking at that and thinking, well, yep, we could probably pay more than them. But there is also the element of homecoming sometimes that allows players to just drop into those situations and go, okay, I felt comfortable there. I liked it there. I did well there. Let me go and recreate that again.
I mean, I would love Kalimundo to actually go back there. I think there's even suggestions he might stay at PSG though.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it's very much undecided, I think, in terms of where space is going to be.
But if he leaves, I kind of see him. I could see him. I know Leeds have been strongly linked. I could kind of see him going there, and I think he's a nice option to add to their attack. Just with Premier League clubs and stuff, it'll be hard for Lens to bring him back. But I would love him to go back there. I think it's a good place for him to develop his game.
Yeah, still a bunch of Premier League clubs that need a striker, and this is going to drag on and on. And if I was PSG, I would definitely hang on there. I think they know the market well enough to be like, wait until, you know, two or three of these guys get to the final week and they'll pay 20 million for him, because they will legitimately do that because they'll need to. That will happen. But
they might even pay a little bit more. I mean, depending. I mean, not outside the Premier League, but within the Premier League, I mean, we've just spoken about Onana going for 33 million. I could see Kalimundo going for at least 25 or so.
Yeah. Just before we move on to the final question, Alex, I'm going to chuck another name into regression. I've already talked about this on the pod before, so I'll keep it brief, but a little bit concerned for Nantes here, who, you know, I was in love with their story last year, having narrowly escaped relegation the year before and then sort of pushing into those top seven, eight places, fighting with those teams pretty consistently, fell away in the end, but obviously won the cup to secure European football. That's an amazing achievement. But you know what that does to a very thin squad. I don't think that they've done particularly well this summer. You know, they've picked up a couple of pieces, one of which is Moussa Sissoko. I think his days at the top level are definitely done. And they lost Randall Colomwani to Eintracht on a free transfer. Ludovic Blas keeps getting linked away. They got absolutely destroyed in the Super Cup. Okay, limited judgment there. But Castelletto is now suspended for the first game. You know, it feels like it's already going really wrong. And I'm worried for them.
Yeah, I actually overlooked them when I was thinking through who's going to regress or not, because I haven't actually got to the big one that I think. But I think I completely agree with everything you've kind of said. I think like losing Colomwani is going to be big as well. I think Blas will stay, right? I think he still has 2 years or so in his contract, maybe with European football. Like, there's enough to keep him there. But yeah, I think also just a problem for Nantes is I know that they have a very poor recruitment team. Like, it's not very expansive. There's not a lot of money that they've been able to put there. So often what they do is they work through like almost word of mouth of like, who can we kind of get here? So yeah, it's just always hard for these teams to be like proactive in terms of being able to rebuild or add depth ahead of new seasons. I don't know, maybe they've kind of invested more in their recruitment team than from like 2 years ago or so, when it became so apparent, I think from the coach himself, that they lacked in that area, finances. But yeah, we'll see. I think that I can also see them kind of having a tough time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Who's the big one then?
The big one is obviously Marseille, which is still the bookies' favorites for like to finish second. But I mean, I have a couple of reasons for it. And I think it's a lot of people kind of, it's obvious the reasons. But first of all, just in looking at the players that they have, their four most important players last season, and best probably, Saliba, Bouba Kamara, Payet, and Guendouzi. Two of those have left. Saliba's back at Arsenal, thank God. And Bouba Kamara is now at Aston Villa, actually. So those are two important pieces. And then Payet, he's what, 35, pushing 36 now, and also very injury prone. Like, his time at the top is, and he's had a great career. I think his time at the top is coming to a close. So that really only leaves Guendouzi in like a very good spot for them, which is kind of what actually led to the other part, is that Sampaoli really didn't like that he lost all of these important pieces to his puzzle. And he left, and they've brought in Tudor, who admittedly I don't know too much about. I'm not a Serie A guy. But yeah, so he's his replacement. We'll see how it kind of goes. He's already, there's murmurings that he's fallen out with three or so senior members of the squad. I won't be surprised if Guendouzi is one of them. But yeah, adding to that to what was actually an overperformance on the underlying metrics last year. There's just a lot of things, and then they're never very good in Europe. I mean, I know that that's not a good way of future predictions, but we'll see. It also stretches them a little bit. And adding into all of that, their general recruitment has seemed weird. There's some deals I really like. Like, I think Klaus is great. And I think a good point is maybe looking into how Tudor like redesigns the squad, because he's got two very good attacking wingbacks in Nuno Tavares from Arsenal again, and then Jonathan Klaus. So maybe he's going to get more out of them out wide. But yeah, it's just a lot to replace. So
also, they're the most chaotic club in football, I think. Like, I don't know if there's anyone more chaotic than this Marseille. It just seemed to chew up managers, chew up players. It's all just nuts. Yeah, it's incredibly enjoyable. That's not meant to. It's really not meant to be a slug. It really is fun to watch. But I also like have no idea season on season where they're going.
Yeah. Also, Alex, just to let you know, obviously, with Igor Tudor, he's probably the antithesis of Sampaoli as a manager. They're very, very different. You know, Tudor's, he's pretty, he's back three, wing backs, direct, get the ball forward as quickly as possible. I know Sampaoli does that at points, but obviously the tactical intricacies, the formation changes on the fly, that sort of stuff, the periods of pretty possession play, I would imagine are all gone. And Tudor is going to stick the ball in the channel, give it to the wing back and have him run 10, 15, 20 yards and just gain ground. That's kind of how he modelled a lot of his play in Serie A.
So you know what? That's funny to me, because I've heard that they want to get rid of Bamba Dieng, who I really like. I think he's very raw and he's kind of a clunky player, but he's a good athlete and he has very good movement. He's just good. He's a chaotic player in himself, just being able to get on the end of things and, you know, find those opportunities. That kind of sounds like a great player for Tudor to kind of want, but it seems, I mean, this has been my own interpretation just by how quickly they've kind of been wanting to get rid of him. It's either they just really need the money from somewhere and he's a better option than elsewhere. But also I was wondering, maybe Tudor just didn't really rate him from the off.
I mean, they have a lot of forwards as well, don't they?
They do, but I think they've got a lot of old forwards. I would want to keep Bamba Dieng.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Which takes us quite nicely, I think, onto our last category. Who are we talking about, Sam? What are we talking about, Sam?
Alex, please give us your tips for Ligue 1's breakout stars this season.
So yeah, I mean, I couldn't narrow it down to just one or two. So I've actually got like a couple here that are more punts than usually, I feel like, in previous seasons, because I do this every season where I kind of try to predict who the breakout stars are going to be. And I usually feel that there are some like really obvious candidates. Maybe it's just because there were so many breakouts in the last year or so, but it feels like there's no one that's super, well, not many that are super clear to kind of break out. But I mean, obviously last year, my take on this pod was Shirky. I'll move on from him quickly, but I'm going to put him in there again. So we hope he has a proper breakout this season.
Every right? single year until he breaks out.
It's not your fault and it's not his fault. It's Leon's fault, and we have to call it until he gets the games he deserves.
He's closing in on a new contract, and I think the contract like issues have been so drawn out because he knows he's good enough to play a starter somewhere in the top five league club, right? I mean, he really is good enough. I think he's one of the best players. When he plays for us, he's always one of the most impressive players, in my opinion. But I think we're closing in on that contract, and I think I really hope at least that that is like, you know, premised on like that he's going to get game time this season.
Right.
It's going to be tough. There's a lot of like congestion in that area. If Paqueta leaves, I think it opens up a lot of interesting like, well, it opens up space from the squad and maybe like an interesting sort of movement into attacking midfielder, which is something I personally wanted to see from him. But yeah, we'll have to see with that. I'm going to call it again that it's his breakout season until he breaks out. Otherwise, so I think let me move. I've got like a nice defender, midfielder, and attacker. So maybe I'll move in that way. Brian Pereira is my next shot.
Whoop.
He's actually never played a senior football yet, but I know him from the Euro under 19s. I know Sam does too.
He was exceptional, very good.
Yeah.
Really good. Right back. Brilliant player. Oh my God.
Yeah, just very good. It's very weird because obviously he was a Lance player, right? And they've just sold Klaus for 7 million. I thought that he was going to be there from the beginning, from like basically when I saw him at the under 19 Euros, I was like, okay, this is the guy who's going to be their replacement, like an internal replacement. But no, he's moved to Auxerre, which is a promoted club. Yeah, mad, right? But yeah, I looked at who the other right back is, and I think Brian Pereira is pretty much a good shot to being the starter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just a very good two-way player, as a lot of these French sort of fullbacks coming through are nowadays. Very good attacker, good on the dribble, good on the cross, good in 1v1 scenarios, going backwards too. A lot of explosiveness in his game.
Yeah, he stands up a player and just goes poof, just takes one step and he's passed it, knocks it around him, and the low deliveries were really good as well. I thought in the under-19 Euros, people went a little bit overboard on Arsenal's Norton Cuffey, and it was actually someone like Brian Pereira that was actually the right back of choice for that tournament. He was phenomenal.
Yeah, I'll say with Norton Cuffey, not that this is an Arsenal pod, but he's one of those players that like does really, really well, and then when things go badly, tries to force the issue way too much, and it just becomes awful. I've seen him do it for the Arsenal under-23s a lot as well. Like, I think I like that he doesn't hide, but he's just one of those guys who tries to force the issue a bit too much. Yeah. Anyways, moving on. Another player who actually was quite hyped last season, I think the hype's kind of died down a little bit now, but is Leslie Ugochukwu. And I think he has a very good like opening. I've not seen too much said about this being his season within like league or circles, but just looking at the squad of Rennes, who is another product of, they've just produced players like crazy, right? I think it just makes sense that he could have a really good breakthrough season. It depends. I mean, they've got Santamaria as kind of the more like defensive guy in that team, right? I think he's okay. I think Ugochukwu, he's like one of those big rangy midfielders, a lot of technique though, can play nice balls from deep, can carry really well. He's just kind of your prototypical like all-rounder midfielder, French midfielder nowadays.
How tall is he?
Quite tall. I don't know the, but he seems very tall. I would definitely say yeah.
Are we talking Tchouaméni mold here?
Or are we talking Chukwu no, Pogba?
So he's more defensively minded than Chukwuemeka or Pogba. But in terms of how he is on the ball, I would say is a lot more in that sort of like stylistic sense, right? Whereas Chimene's quite like, I wouldn't say rigid, but he's more like a mover in terms of like just using his athleticism to get there. Whereas there's something nice about like how Ugochukwu can kind of move around with the ball. He's been given the sixth shirt, which I actually checked just before the pod, just because I think that's always a good way of seeing where a player kind of figures in the estimations of the club.
Yep.
And then if they go to a three at the back, which they could do, then I really think that there isn't really another player in that squad that can fit into one of the two central midfielder roles, because they'll probably have someone more attacking, knowing Genesio and their squad in general. But then they're going to need someone who has a lot of energy, ability to get up and down, which I think Ugochukwu fits, as well as having that quality on the ball. And then even if it's a midfield three, I think he'll find his way in. So he's my shout for the midfield one. And then I've actually got two attackers, but let me go first for the guy who's actually belongs to a Ligue 1 club, and he's a new addition to Toulouse, as Zakaria Aboukalel. He's like 22 or so now. Kind of was very hyped, I think you guys might remember, a couple years ago at AZ Alkmaar.
Yeah, he's coming from the Netherlands, hasn't he? I'm not familiar, but the name rings a bell, from the Dutch league.
Yeah, yeah. So he, when they had all of those sort of, you know, like Stengs and everyone and Baudu, yeah, he was also like one of the names outside of like the main sort of Quipmeners and Vindal adding those. He was one of the names just outside of them. But he's very good, very good on both feet. One of those like very exciting players who can kind of just accelerate and stop and kind of create angles to shoot. That's the sort of player that he is. A lot of athleticism, good technique, close control at times. And yeah, likes to kind of very direct in how he can play. I'm not completely sure what kind of happened at Alkmaar, but from what I've read around the places that, like, I think he kind of fell out with the club management to some extent with the fans. I think there was some interview where, like, he said he wasn't affected by what the fans thought of him or something like that. It's one of those situations. So I think this is just a really good place for him to actually, a new environment where he's also going to get a lot of minutes. And yeah, I think he could have a breakout season of his own. Then the last guy, and apologies for speaking about Arsenal so often, so much on this pod, but I really think now that he's moved yesterday to Reims, I really think this could be a Folarin and Balogun season. It's honestly a move I've been wanting him to have for like 2 years now. He's really just needed a move where he's going to get regular minutes. I really rate him as a player. He's a very rounded player, center forward. You know, he can hold up. He can go behind. He can play out wide and dribble in. I mean, he's a center forward in type, but you know the type of ones, especially modern day, that like to
drift.
Yep. So he's got a lot in his game. Very good technically, with very good finish. But what he's lacked is just having the actual minutes to play. I mean, he finally got a move to Middlesbrough halfway through last season, right in the second half. But I mean, I think you could see, I saw one or two of his games, you could kind of see that this is like his first forays into senior football at now age, what, 21 or so, right? So it's been long overdue. I don't think Arsenal dealt with his development too well, but he's kind of come in as Ekitike was their player. He didn't play like complete first team minutes, but I think Balogun's coming in to kind of replace him in the squad and will get a lot of minutes in doing so. So I see him as a breakout star in the league.
Very good. Yeah, Arsenal, they did handle him poorly, I think. He got stuck for about 2 years, didn't he, between senior and youth football. He's at under-23s and scoring like 5 goals a game. And it's like, what are you getting from this?
I can tell you, he looked so bored playing those games. Like, he looked unbothered. The amount of times he would just, like, receive, hold off, and, like, backheel, like, very nonchalantly, without even, like, really feeling like he was trying to make something happen. He was just playing with defenders. I think it was partly down to the kind of, like, regime change between, like, the Emery, Donnarumma, Sanelli, and that sort of era, moving to kind of, like, now what we've got with Arteta and Edu, that he kind of got caught in the middle of, and then also just the way that, I there was sort of, like, lack of misunderstanding between agent and club and stuff like that. But I think ultimately Arsenal didn't handle it well. We've got to this position now.
Yeah, where there's a chance.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's a big opportunity for him. And with that, we'll bring this to a close, Alex. But thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure walking through Ligue 1 with you. Do you want to just tell the Rank Squad where they can find you?
You can find me at AlexFRCO on Twitter, where I'm probably either tweeting about Lyon, Ligue 1, or Arsenal. Or other young players. So you can find me there. But thanks so much for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to be on Ranks. And yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Mr. Sam Tai for those questions as well, mate.
Oh, cheers, mate. Thanks. Yeah. 10 minutes on the train, well spent.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done. Very well prepared, as usual. I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening, as ever. Take it easy.
how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunchventure with Cap'n Crunch.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.